The Minneapolis bridge that collapsed yesterday was being repaired when it buckled. It may be a while before questions about what made a section of the 40-year-old bridge plunge into the Mississippi are answered. And while bridge disasters are rare, many factors can lead to a collapse. If you have questions about how bridges are built, what keeps them safe, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. With us now is Paul Thompson. He's a consultant in bridge management, and he joins us from his office in Castle Rock, Colorado. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So, in general, what makes a bridge collapse?
Well, first of all, I want to say my thoughts and prayers go out to the families of those killed and missing in the tragedy. A lot of things can cause a bridge to collapse. It could be anything from a flood to deterioration, to metal fatigue, to earthquakes. There are quite a variety of things that can happen.
And what should a bridge owner do if, in the sort of normal course of inspections, the Department of Transportation says this bridge needs repairs?
Well, you know, it's a lot of that is a matter of money. Across the nation, there are 80,000 bridges that were in the same category of having relatively deteriorated conditions on the federal scale, and to replace all those bridges would cost something like $30 billion. That's billion with a B, and so it's real money. What bridge owners have to do is set priorities and do the best they can, but we've not been putting the kind of money into the program that's necessary to ensure that this kind of thing doesn't happen.
And how often do those federal inspections happen?
Well, across the nation, it's the typical interval is every 2 years. Minnesota has a better inspection program than most, and their bridges are inspected every year. That's generally enough to catch problems on most bridges.
And how do you maintain a bridge? I mean, does it just have a sort of natural lifespan?
Well, it does, especially this type of bridge, a steel truss bridge. They do wear out, and they just be watched. This particular bridge is relatively new, but the average bridge of this type is 66 years old. Across the nation, so but even a relatively new bridge, there's a bunch of standardized things that inspectors look for in order to see the signs of early aging and do something about it in time.
And when a new bridge is being built, and all these different considerations of materials and aesthetics and safety and lifespan are considered, are there certain designs, you mentioned this one with steel truss versus, say, a suspension bridge, that change that equation?
Yes, this particular kind of bridge was really common in the early part of the 20th century when we didn't know how to build bridges with more redundancy for long spans like this. But nowadays, we do know how to do that, and so we typically build bridges with more redundancy whenever we can. The great thing about that type of bridge is it gives you warning if something is wrong with it, so you have enough time to get out there and close the bridge if there's a problem. With a steel truss bridge like this, sometimes it can fail catastrophically without any warning at all.
And what determines what kind of bridge gets built in the first place?
Economics have a big effect, aesthetics have a big effect, and just the state of the art and how we understand how to build a bridge that's going to meet all of our requirements. We've gotten a lot better at that over the last few decades, and so we build sturdier bridges. But we have an awful lot of really old bridges out there that we just can't afford to replace, so we have to take care of them.
Also with us is Patrick Sparks. He's a structural engineer and president of the board of the Historic Bridge Foundation. He joins us from his office in Austin, Texas. Welcome.
Thank you.
What would you say is the life cycle of a bridge?
Well, we normally see bridges function well beyond their design life, and the design life of a bridge is a function of a lot of times it's a function of how much traffic is expected and so forth. But the physical life of a bridge may go beyond 70 years. There are bridges in the United States that still function after 100 or more years. And Paul is right, we can't afford to replace them. So rehabilitation is becoming a bigger part of our transportation industry.
And when you're looking at an older bridge, what sort of things are you looking at?
Well, we look at the condition of the materials and the type of construction, the type of design, how the bridge is put together, and as Paul mentioned, how the bridge is going to respond to some injury, whether it's the loss of a footing or an impact from a barge or from traffic or from decay of the structural members. How is it going to respond to that? And bridges of different types respond differently.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's take a call from Philip in Sacramento. Philip, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Oh, hi. How are you?
How are you? You're on the air.
Oh, good. My question was this. In watching the video, it looked like the failure of one span caused the failure of multiple spans. I mean, it doesn't seem too likely that all several spans would have failed at the same time. What type of construction was it that would have caused one failure to cause the other failures, and is that a consideration in bridge construction? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Philip. Paul Thompson, do you have an answer for him?
Sure. This type of bridge in general is able to do that, where the failure of one span can take out other spans. It basically does it by overloading the other spans. It's the type of thing that is a problem with not having enough redundancy in the structure. And in modern bridge construction, we try to avoid that situation. But this bridge back in 1967, people just didn't have a complete understanding of how to do that.
And if among all the sort of finger pointing that's going on today to try to figure out what caused this failure, some political will comes out of it to try to ensure this doesn't happen in the future, what would you like to see change? What do you think we can learn going forward? Paul Thompson?
Yeah, well, we need to take a more strategic and intelligent approach to how we set priorities and decide on funding levels. We do too much by the seat of the pants, and people make guesses, but we're talking about a lot of money and potential safety issues that we have to deal with. And there is some science now in the field of bridge management to make some more intelligent decisions about this, but we need to go farther in implementing that so people have a better idea of how to set priorities and be more likely to avoid these tragedies.
And Patrick Sparks, would you have a different answer to that question? What would you like to see happen?
Well, I agree substantially with Paul. I guess the first thing I would say is that certainly at this point, finger pointing is non-productive, and any speculation now is just inappropriate. And there is a risk of some sort of a rapid response to solve a problem, but I think that there may be some real substantial lessons come out of this. And historically, what we see response to disasters bring changes in design and understanding and in policy, and all of those things are important as we go forward to learn. And that's what engineering is. It's a learning process.
Let's hear from Wesley in Kansas City. Wesley, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I had a comment about all the things going on with the bridges in this. They seem to be pushing the engineers to the operating limit. It seems that we would have learned a lesson from the bridge builders of thousands of years ago, that we've had bridges that have lasted thousands of years and can still function, and yet we're talking about a bridge that failed in less than 40 years.
Mm. Yeah, Patrick Sparks, what makes
sure,
a bridge last?
I'd like to respond to that. It is startling that a bridge that is only 40 years old would fail abruptly without warning, and it certainly makes it certainly requires the engineering community to examine that. But the number of potential causes is a huge number of potential causes, and so just we have to go carefully forward to make sure we understand it. But to answer the question, yes, we have learned over the course of history, but I would venture to also to say that economics and speed of development have pushed us sometimes away from those older lessons. And so it is true that certain kinds of bridges back in history did perform very well. Arch bridges, the aqueducts, for example, are a great example of a bridge form that is very long-lasting.
And we have to leave it there. Patrick Sparks is a structural engineer. He joined us from his office in Austin, Texas. Thank you so much. We were also joined by Paul Thompson, a consultant in bridge management. He was in his office in Castle Rock, Colorado. NPR News will be following this story throughout the day. For more, you can go to npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts.